From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Two people were killed and 18 others were injured in a shooting early Monday morning outside Club Blue in Fort Myers. The venue had been hosting a party for teens. The shooting occurred as parents were picking up their kids outside the club. Victims treated at area hospitals ranged in age from 12 to 27 years old. As an investigation into the shooting continues, law enforcement has three suspects in custody at this time. With a community in mourning, we'll get reaction from local officials and community leaders as we explore gun violence in the Fort Myers area, creating safe spaces for the region's youth and the grieving process for those reeling from loss and trauma. Plus, as athletes from across the globe head to Rio for next month's Olympic Games, we'll meet some competitors from right here in Southwest Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. The start of the Summer Olympic Games is now just days away. Among those preparing to compete are Florida Gulf Coast University alums here in Southwest Florida. We'll meet volleyball player Brooke Sweat and swimmer Lonnie Cabrera later this hour. But first, two people were killed and 18 others injured in a shooting outside Club Blue in Fort Myers early Monday morning. The venue had been hosting a party for teens. The shooting occurred shortly after midnight as parents were picking up their kids outside the club. The 19 victims treated at area hospitals ranged in age from 12 to 27 years old and include 18-year-old Stefan Strouder, who died from his injuries. 14-year-old Sean Archiles died on the scene. As the investigation into the shooting continues, law enforcement has three suspects in custody, Derek Church, Tazy Battle, and Demetrius O'Neill. The tragedy marks the latest in what residents have seen as a pattern of gun violence in the region. The Club Blue shooting marks the fifth such high-profile case of gun violence in the area in the past 10 months. With a community in mourning, today we get reaction from local officials and community leaders as we explore gun violence in the Fort Myers area, creating safe spaces for the region's youth and the grieving process for those reeling from loss and trauma. Joining me now in studio is Fort Myers Mayor Randy Henderson. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Abdul Haq Muhammad joins us as well. He's Executive Director of the Quality Life Center in Dunbar. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
And we're also speaking with Will Prather in studio. He's owner of the Broadway Palm Dinner Theater and a basketball dad. He knew fatal shooting victim Stefan Strouder.
Will Prather on here, too.
As their sons played together on the same traveling team. Thanks for taking the time to be with us, Will.
Thank you, John.
And on the phone with us is Chinetta Campbell Brunson, president of the James Brunson Youth Development Foundation. Her niece was also injured in the shooting. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon.
Trish Rout joins us by phone as well. She's the program coordinator for Southwest Florida Crime Stoppers. Welcome back, Trish.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, John.
Lee County School District Superintendent Greg Atkins joins us as well. Welcome to the show. And Reverend Allison Farnham with the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers joins us as well. Welcome, Reverend Farnham.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
And lastly, we're joined by President and CEO of Hope Healthcare Services here in Fort Myers, Samira Beckwith. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
And Trish Rout, I wanted to begin with you. We know the investigation led by the Fort Myers Police Department is ongoing, but we heard Monday that police were still looking to interview shooting victims who were treated and released from the hospital before law enforcement got a chance to interview them. Are police still looking for some of those folks or others who just may have information about the shooting?
Absolutely. You know, we know that there's a lot of people out there that have got information, not only people that were at Club Blue on Monday morning, but also people who know some of the players involved, people that had information on who was going to be at the club that night, people who have information on who was carrying guns and who had some kind of intent in their heart to cause death and destruction. For whatever reason, a good number of people have not come forward, including some of the victims themselves, which makes it very frustrating on the part of law enforcement. When you've got someone who's been victimized, you've been shot, you would think that that person would want to assist and provide information to find out who shot them. But what we're encountering is just the opposite. We're getting a lack of cooperation from victims, a lack of cooperation from witnesses. So we're really reaching out to the community in hopes that, you know, somebody will have that human moment and realize that, you know, we've suffered a horrendous loss in our community. Two young men are going to be buried. They had great futures ahead of them. The tragedy is just unspeakable. And for people to have information and not come forward is equally heartbreaking for us. You know, the people who did this to these two young men need to face justice. But people who have information on the identities of these shooters and who aren't coming forward and who aren't talking to law enforcement or calling Crime Stoppers, they're equally guilty in our eyes.
Well, remind everybody how Crime Stoppers works for those folks who may be reluctant to come forward and identify themselves.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we are completely anonymous. And people will sometimes say, well, I don't want to talk because I fear retaliation. With Crime Stoppers, when you call us or you go online and communicate with us, you're completely anonymous. We don't have caller tracing. We don't record any calls. We just take the information that you have. We give you a code number. It's just a series of five or six numbers. We then send that information immediately to law enforcement. In this case, all of the tips are going directly to Chief Eads himself, and then they follow up on it from there. You're not a witness. You don't have to go to court. You don't have to testify. You don't have to go to any kind of depositions. You are completely anonymous from start to finish. And that's something that we really want to reiterate to people, that there is no fear of retaliation. But if you've got that information, we absolutely have to have that information. Law enforcement cannot do this alone.
And, you know, you had expressed some frustration about, you know, not getting the sort of cooperation you were looking for. But are calls coming in to Crime Stoppers? Are some people speaking out?
Very few. You know, the first 24 hours, the phones were silent. And that, I've been doing this a little bit more than a decade, and that was heartbreaking. They're starting to trickle in, and it's a very slow trickle. And, again, that is very unfortunate. So we're constantly imploring the community, if you know something about this, if you even heard, even if it's secondhand information that you heard something leading up to this event, you need to call us and share that information. Without the community's help, it's going to be very difficult holding these people accountable.
Are there any plans for billboards like we saw after the ZombieCon shooting, or was that kind of a special situation just given the sheer number of people who were downtown that night?
I'm actually in negotiations for some billboards right now, and we're hoping to have them up, if not by the end of today, by the end of tomorrow. So we are going to be, if somebody hasn't heard about this already, we want to remind them that we need their information.
All right. And Mayor Henderson, I understand you were first alluded to the shooting by a very early morning phone call from one of our other guests today, Shanetta Brunson. Tell us about receiving that call and your initial reaction.
CC reached out to me in the early morning hours between 1 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. to give me the sad news that her niece had been stricken by a stray bullet. And it was during that time that my morning began to unfold as I reached out to Chief Eads to begin to understand what was going on in real time. Let me hasten to add, though, that as we, as mayor and council and city, continue to mourn the loss of Sean Archilles and Stefan Strader, that in the midst of that, we continue to be vigilant in looking at ways to do better. We have been working for well over a year and a half to expand law enforcement services. I am even hopeful that yet we will be able to rein in the horrible perpetrator of the ZombieCon crime as well. But let me just say to all citizens that we will remain vigilant and working harder to keep citizens safer. And this is just another example of a broken heart situation.
And I think as been intimated, these types of tragedies in the recent past have galvanized the community to come together and seek answers. And do you see this most recent incident as perhaps another catalyst for getting more action, getting more community cooperation, and perhaps more action from city council or other local government officials?
This community is rich with people who have big hearts. Attention that's been heaped upon City Hall in ways of helping reach citizens and come to their aid has been staggering and impressive. So, yes, we remain steadfast in the plea to reach out to Crime Stoppers. Any tip will give our law enforcement an opportunity to bring in justice. And let me remind everyone, too, that it's just not the City of Fort Myers Police Department. It's the Sheriff's Department, Mike Scott and his team. It's FBI, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, coalescing around this to bring justice to the table.
And Abdul-Haq Muhammad, I wanted to get your response as well. I have to say you were one of the first people that came into my mind simply because the Quality Life Center, which you founded, so much about that organization's mission is about creating safe spaces for our area's youth. This must be hitting you particularly hard.
Well, you've heard our thoughts before, John, and I want to say before we leave the Crime Stoppers point, we're having a candlelight vigil tomorrow at 6:30. We will assemble at Quality Life Center. This is not a Quality Life Center event. That happens to be the point of reference. We're expecting the community in general to turn out and to express its concerns. We hope to define the context of that event. It has a basic theme, don't curse the darkness, but light a candle. And we hope to define exactly what that statement means by getting involved in the community on a number of levels. To your point, it's hurtful because a lot of what we're seeing as it relates to violence can be prevented, in my view. And it has a great deal to do not only with the citizenry coming together, but also resources, dollars. And where we may increase law enforcement budget to react to the violence that we see from where I stand, if we put more resources on the front end and engage children in very positive activities, we can find ourselves diverting children from the streets and seeing that as an alternative to crime. And so we're strong advocates of putting resources at the front end rather than reacting and responding as we tend to do when these events come about.
Can you speak to how this tragedy maybe is influencing maybe conversations you hear among folks who utilize the Quality Life Center? I would imagine some of the kids who come there may have been victims.
Monday morning, we have staff who knew or know both of these children. They've worked with them. They've instructed them, taught them. It was a sad moment. One of our children was wounded, as referenced earlier, and she was there today. We're very grateful. And so when these tragedies occur, many of our children and staff know something about the victims. It's very, very common. And I was sharing with Will and the mayor earlier that we have a flag that flies very proudly in front of our building, the American flag. And throughout this year, it's been at half mast. And it seems like we can't get it up to the top because there's a continuous tragedy, not only in our community, but throughout the country. And so I feel that there's a need not just to react in an emotional way, but we need to look at ways that we can put activities, programs in effect to stem what we're seeing. It's not going away. And it just can't simply be prayed away. We have to work. We have to put strategy in place. We have to put resources in place in order to see a difference to take place in this community.
And Mayor Henderson, just real quickly, I wanted to come back to you. The Fort Myers Police Department is preparing to undergo a leadership change with the recent selection of former Toledo Police Chief Derek Diggs to head the FMPD. Any comment on that leadership change or on really just how the department and other law enforcement agencies are handling the investigation?
Chief Eads has done a remarkable job in working through this very challenging time. He has communicated often and daily and hourly with Chief Diggs, who is transitioning from Toledo down to Fort Myers. We are in final events of getting the contract tidied up. There's been an agreement in principle, but his biggest challenge is physically getting his home established here and moving down. Nonetheless, Diggs has been debriefing with me at the end of each day on his communication to Chief Eads. Our law enforcement agency is stable and intact, is working with other agencies on this very challenging endeavor. And I want to hearken back on the notion of Chief Eads, Chief Diggs. As talented as he is, and he'll be a compliment to the agency, the Crime Stoppers efforts, I want to appeal to every citizen who may have knowledge on this matter in this way. The law enforcement is ready to aid and assist and execute in a professional way to bring justice to the table. Any citizen who knows of information that could aid law enforcement, I beg you to please reach out. Do not be living a life of self-imposed imprisonment to awful, awful perpetrators of these crimes. You can be protected. You can come forward anonymously. Do not live a life of imprisonment, self-imposed by yourself because you want to remain silent. Let us help you. Help our law enforcement. Let's get those who are going to be a danger to our society off the street forever. And that's a passionate plea on myself, from myself on behalf of counsel. Help our law enforcement agencies.
All right. Shanetta Brunson, I wanted to bring you into the conversation. Your niece, Alana Campbell, was among those shot. I understood she actually rode in the ambulance with Stefan Strouder, who died from his injuries shortly thereafter. How is Alana doing now? Is she among those who have been released from the hospital?
Yes, she is. She's been very well. She talked to me briefly about the experience that she had and how she came out of the building. She realized that her and another cousin were running towards the gentleman that was shooting the gun. And so they immediately turned around and ran back. And that's how she received her gunshot to her leg. And thank God that it wasn't worse than that, because she told me how two bullets went right past her ear. And I'm just overwhelmed with what has occurred, to believe that someone or some people just have opened fire on innocent children. We're just fed up. I'm fed up, and not just because my family is injured. I also have a nephew that was injured in the same incident. We just have to put a stop to it. Some of the citizens have got to come out and stand up and let people know what is going on. So that hopefully will happen. I'm going to do my best to try and get some people on board. I've had numerous people contact me through Facebook tags, emails, phone calls. And so hopefully when I'm back later today in this week, we can get some people together and try to get some of these issues resolved.
All right. And we'll pray there. We'd spoken earlier this week. I know that you knew Stefan. You described yourself to me as a basketball dad. Your son plays on a team with him. He'd stayed at your house before. I know it's only been 2 days since we spoke last, but are you still kind of bothered by those what-ifs? Because you had talked about how he had actually been supposed to stop by your house at some point that night.
Yeah, in fact, they were still, if they would have kept winning over the weekend, Friday evening, he's playing in front of 30 college coaches in Disney World at the ESPN Sports Center. And if they would have won a couple more games and they may have not even been here. So, yeah, there's some second guessing going on with both his teammates. Wish he would have been sitting on my couch playing 2K. Part of the problem is there's very little for teens, particularly between the ages of 14 and 18, in high school to do at night. There's not safe places for them to go. They can only go to see so many movies, and other than that, you know, there's a curfew. There's a curfew in this city for a reason, mm-hmm. And it's to keep people safe. So as a community, we really have to have a broader discussion about creating safe places for these teens. And there's tens of thousands of them in here, particularly in the summer, that are wanting to see their friends. They want to listen to music. They're not bad kids. And this is just some, you know, bad circumstances at the wrong time.
All right. And I wanted to bring Greg Atkins into the conversation now, Lee County Superintendent of Schools. I understood that you had expressed frustration just over the number of tragic instances that you've had to respond to in your really relatively brief tenure as superintendent. Can you maybe tell us about that comment?
Good afternoon. I have been literally on the job less than a year, about 11 months at this time. But in that short period of time, the number of students that we've had involved in these violent activities, it's alarming. It's disheartening. I'd have to agree with some of the other speakers that, you know, actively engaged students, engaging students in positive activities after school hours is something that we need to really take a hard look at it as a community. Because we've had to bury too many of our kids, and it has a impact that rolls into school, you know, because not only are the victims' families, but also on their school families. It's just nothing is more tragic than the loss of a young life when they have their whole life ahead of them. There's just more that I think that we need to do as a community so that we don't have to do this as much as we've had to do it recently.
In a general sense, is there a type of response you like to see from school district staff and from educators after something like this? I mean, because as you've said, you know, this kind of trauma is going to permeate the schools. These kids are going to be heading back to the classroom next month.
Well, one of the things that we have seen, like, for example, at Lehigh, you know, it is a family, and, you know, there's an opportunity for, you know, counselors and teachers and educators to be with the kids and their families to help move them through the grieving process and to help other kids that are grieving as well. But I think, moving forward, what we would like to see more social services in schools. One of the things that we have to be able to do is to open up lines of communication, because I think what we find is that people do know things. These things don't just spontaneously happen in many cases. And so we have to set up communication systems that allow kids to be able to report things anonymously in such a way that they feel comfortable in doing so that we can prevent a lot of these things from happening. I also think that, the key to a lot of things for kids to prevent some of this stuff is education in general and, educating our students to see, a brighter future, and then also beyond the school day to work with our community, our city, Fort Myers, our county, to make sure that we have activities for these kids to do. Even before this was happening, Saheed Kasemi and I were sitting down and talking about trying to come up with a way to work to get kids from our schools to some of the after-school programs that are out there, and the STARS complex being, one of them, where you can see kids positively engage and also be involved in, not only just athletic and activities, but also after-school tutoring and things such as that.
All right.
There's a lot of things that we can do.
All right. And Reverend Farnham, news reports I saw kind of showed you on the scene of the shooting fairly early Monday morning. Tell us about your initial response and why you decided being there was something you needed to do.
Well, I feel like the initial response is heartbreak. And after hearing the news, it was there was very little brain activity involved. It was just a let's get in the car and go and offer flowers. And there's so much grief, and it's a collective grief, and it's a sadness for me that as a person of faith who wants to make earth more like heaven, to see this this hell that we've created through a culture of gun violence and violence in this country, and to see yet another time where gun violence has appeared in our own community. But what really got me was just thinking about the people who are in the waiting rooms, worrying, grieving. So it was time to just bring flowers. And at the same time, there's so much more to do. And to hear about the work, for instance, that Mr. Muhammad is working with and gathering people together to really work on the front end of finding this long-term justice work that empowers children, that educates children, and that invests in our children, is creating new systems where we have old broken systems that aren't working for our community. So it's really always heartening to hear Mr. Muhammad speak. And I'm also wearing my hat as co-president of an interfaith justice ministry group in our county called Lee Interfaith for Empowerment. And as I've come away from this, you know, delivering flowers and just feeling that it was a very lonely act, and realizing that the beauty of the interfaith justice ministry is that we all come together to do justice and to listen to the cries of the community and to call forth solutions to bring to the institutions, to governments, and different systems, so that we can make long-term systemic change in Lee County. And it's been very powerful work, and now more than ever before, I am just so committed to our life organization.
All right. Well, Reverend Farnham there has touched on, you know, definitely the grieving process, the immediate aftermath there. We're also joined by Samira Beckwith with Hope Healthcare Services here in Fort Myers. You know, Samira, the loss of a loved one, perhaps after a long illness, I'm thinking in terms of how Hope Healthcare Services is mostly linked with palliative care. But that kind of loss can be quite different from the sudden loss of a loved one after an event like the shooting, especially when the victims are so young. But is the grieving process and the importance of grieving essentially the same?
Well, the importance of grieving is still very, very much the same. Some of the response will be different. And in addition to the care that we've provided to people who are at the end of life and the grief support to their families and their loved ones, we have for the past 30 years also provided grief response and grief support for people who have experienced a sudden loss. Our Rainbow Trails Bereavement Camp for Children, for example, has 60% of the children who attend that camp have not been associated with hospice and have had the loss be because of either accident or some kind of crime, something tragic. So, you know, it's an area that we have had a great deal of experience in, unfortunately. You know, I mean, I'm sorry that happens. And what I find important about what all of the other speakers have shared is the fact that as a community, the community is coming together to allow the students, to allow the young adults, really to allow everyone in the community to express their feelings. And that is what's very, very important. The reactions, the grief reactions, they're physical, they're emotional, they're behavioral. And without addressing the grief reactions, then we can only expect more negativity in the community. And so if there's a positive, the positive I've heard today is the fact that people are being allowed to express themselves. And it's only through that expression and then using the reactions and coming together and finding a way to really find a positive activity, you know, the coming together, the vigil, looking at what we can do instead of what we can't do, that's so important. And so the children in the schools, and again, I'm going to say everybody, really needs to have support during this period of time to be able to talk, to express themselves, to look at what they can do positive now, to make a difference, what they can do, and then to also understand what the grief experience is and the grief response is, because it can also be physical. You know, people will feel sick from this, and we need to be able to respond to that. I know that we have some bereavement counselors that will join other counselors over the next period of time to help people with their grief. My caution, though, is that this is not short-term. This is long-term, and this wonderful response that we're seeing now has to continue. We just can't do it for, you know, a few weeks, a few months, have a few meetings, and then think that everybody's going to be okay.
Right. Barry University's School of Social Work will be providing grief counseling services at the Candlelight Vigil that will be hosted by the Quality Life Center Thursday evening. Is that perhaps an effective way to reach people suffering loss who wouldn't seek out help on their own? Is it common for grieving people to not seek out help if they need it, based on some sort of negative stigma about needing mental health or just simply wanting to isolate?
Oh, I think that's very common, you know, to feel or feel overwhelmed and sad and not seek out help. And so I think the Candlelight Vigil will be very helpful because there'll be counselors there from many different sources. I think the school counselors are doing a wonderful job in terms of responding and being there for people. I think our mayor and our just really everybody is being there and just listening. You know, allow, and this is really important too, allow people to talk. If they are wanting to express themselves and we shut them down and say, oh, everything is going to be okay, and not allow them to express what it is that they're feeling, then they're not going to seek out support. It may not be social counseling or structured counseling, but they will be able to express themselves in other ways, with each other, with coaches, with their other people that they respect, church members. So that's important.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, but wanted to say thanks so much to my guests. We've been talking with Fort Myers Mayor Randy Henderson, Lee County School Superintendent Greg Atkins, Abdul-Haq Muhammad, Executive Director of the Quality Life Center, President of the James Brunson Youth Development Foundation, Jeanetta Campbell Brunson, Trish Rout with Southwest Florida Crime Stoppers, Reverend Allison Farnham with the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers, and Samira Beckwith, President and CEO of Hope Healthcare Services in Fort Myers. Thank you so much to everybody for joining us today. We're taking a short break, but when we return, WGCU's Amy Tardiff introduces us to some of Southwest Florida's own athletes heading to Rio for the Summer Olympic Games, which kick off in August. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.